Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Martin Strath, founder of Trend News Online at thetrendletter.com. He's speaking to us from Coquitlam, BC, which is just east of Vancouver. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good to be here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. This week, the Bank of Canada and the European Central Bank cut their key interest rates by a quarter of a percent. Do you think the Fed will follow suit?
Yeah, the Bank of Canada led the way there on Wednesday. So, yeah, they dropped 25 points down to 4.75. I mean, that's their first cut in 4 years. Then Thursday, we had the ECB follow suit. So they cut also same amount, 25 points. Now they're down to 3.75, and that's their first cut in 5 years. And, you know, we need to understand, too, the ECB cut, even though the recent inflation data in Europe was actually higher than expected. I mean, it's the first time it's risen in about 5 months. So we've been saying for some time that the Fed would be the last to cut because the U.S. economy is that much stronger than Canada and Europe and Japan and pretty much the rest of the world. You know, for the Fed, according to the Fed Watch tool, you know, there's only a 0.3% chance that they would cut next week. And there's like an 18.5% chance that they would cut 25 points on July 20 or 31st. So although I think the odds of a July cut would probably increase, so we'll see how the data kind of comes out as we get closer. But you got to remember the year started with the expectations that there would be 6 or 7 rate cuts in the U.S. But, you know, inflation numbers, especially in the U.S., have been stayed higher or more sticky than the Fed would have liked. So recent expectations now is for a maximum of 2 Fed cuts this year. Now, why would the Fed cut in July? So, you know, first off, you know, this week we had both Target and Walmart. They both reported consumer discretionary spending was down dramatically. Now we see U.S. job openings been dropping. Although today, you know, we got U.S. job numbers. I mean, these numbers are just crazy. They were 272,000 new jobs, yet employment dropped by 408,000. I mean, so go figure. These numbers are so constantly manipulated. I don't know how anybody can actually rely on them. But ultimately, to us, the Fed will need to see rising unemployment in order to really start to cut rates. Now, of course, we do have a U.S. election, and you know there's going to be a lot of pressure internally from the Biden administration to get some Fed to cut because, you know, they want to get the American voters feeling like they got some money.
With the Bank of Canada and European Central Bank lowering rates and the Fed expected to lower at least once this year, will we see close to 1 or 2% interest rates again?
Well, you know, I really don't see it. You know, you have to remember that the reason we saw interest rates so low for a decade there was because the economy was in such trouble, you know, from that financial crisis in 2008. Right through to COVID in 2020, you know, and then after the, you know, 2008 crisis, you know, the Fed started cutting rates because they wanted to get inflation up. Remember, they wanted to get it up to 2% and they couldn't do it. So, you know, the Fed, the Bank of Canada, the ECB, you know, they all artificially kept rates low, trying to encourage businesses and consumers. You know, they wanted to get them to borrow and spend. But it wasn't working. And really, the only thing benefiting from all of those low rates was the stock market. So then COVID happened. You know, they shut down the global supply chain. Central banks, you know, were pumping trillions into the economy. We had governments handing out free money. I mean, the U.S. alone handed out $5 trillion in pandemic relief program. So then inflation started to skyrocket with the supply chain shut down. and all this new demand thanks to all that money being handed out. And you have to remember that this was all before Russia invaded Ukraine. You know, inflation was already at 8.6% in the U.S. before Russia invaded Ukraine. So, again, you have to remember, as inflation ramps up, the Fed said it was transitory. But inflation feeds on itself. You know, everybody was trying to catch up to the rising cost of living. You know, it affected workers. You had unions demanding and getting huge pay packages. You know, I can remember, you know, auto workers, the pilots, FedEx drivers, they all received substantial pay increases. You know, California, you know, fast food workers, they're making over $20 an hour now. So that's all inflationary. You know, in addition, then you've got governments, they're spending wildly. You know, they're racking up these massive deficits and debts. Then again, that's all inflationary. So I think the only way we're going to see inflation down to like the 2% is if we get a recession. And if we, you know, unless we get a recession, I think inflation is going to stay much higher than most people believe. And I don't see rates going back to 1 or 2% anytime soon.
With the Bank of Canada and the European Central Bank cutting, what does that mean for the Canadian dollar, the euro, and the U.S. dollar?
Well, you know, for currencies, I always say that it's really all about the U.S. dollar. So if the U.S. dollar is strong, that negatively affects most other currencies. You know, it affects commodities, equities, precious metals. And when the U.S. dollar is weak, well, then these other things tend to rally. So now we've got the Bank of Canada and the ECB have cut rates. You know, just this week, I mean, the U.S. dollar just shot higher. So the Canadian dollar's down, the euro's down, you know, so you got the Fed, their rate now is 5.5% because they haven't cut theirs. Bank of Canada is 4.75. So the value of the Canadian dollar is declining versus the U.S. dollar. Same thing for the euro. So, you know, if you look at the bond rates, the 2-year U.S. bond is paying 4.8%. The Canadian is paying just over 4%. Well, Germany, their 2 years paying 3%. So if you're capital looking for safety and some return, you're going to put it into the U.S. dollar and U.S. bonds, certainly versus the Canadian dollar or the euro. So longer term, you know, we expect the U.S. economy is going to stay stronger than most, which means the U.S. dollar is going to be stronger than most. And it doesn't mean we like the U.S. dollar. It just means that it's like the least ugly house on the block. So 2024, you know, we all knew this was going to be a wild ride, a real roller coaster up and down. We have elections everywhere. I mean, this week we got the EU election that's starting to happen, I think on Thursday or next Thursday, I think it is, with the polls and showing right now that the right is going to lead by a large margin. And then, of course, we've got the U.S. election, which we know is going to be a gong show. It's going to be a lot of civil unrest. But when you get global civil unrest, we expect we're going to see capital flow to the U.S. dollar for safety. Now, that's going to seem counterintuitive to most, but people, investors need to understand that this stuff's all connected. So near-term resistance for the U.S. dollar would be 105. I mean, today, right now, it's almost there at 104.9. And then you got support at sitting about 102. Now, for the Canadian dollar, you know, I see it's going to be a real mixed bag. You know, for the average Canadian consumer, a reduced Canadian dollar is going to make the cost of goods more expensive, especially related, obviously, to imports and food. You know, our purchasing power is just keeps getting depleted more and more. Now, as investors, though, you know, with things like resource sector, I think the Canadian producers are going to do very well. So I'm talking about things like copper, oil, natural gas, uranium, you know, ultimately even gold and silver. You know, with oil, you know, we've got the new expanded pipeline, and that's now reducing the discount Canadian producers are receiving. So with oil going to, you know, $100 U.S., which I'm sure it will be, and likely higher, and the Canadian dollar likely headed below 70 and likely lower, I think these Canadian producers are going to make a killing.
You've noted a number of times how Canadians feel the pain of higher interest rates much more than Americans. Can you explain?
Well, yeah, I mean, it primarily relates to debt, you know, so we're talking, you know, mortgage debt and household debt. You know, in the U.S., they have 30-year mortgages, where here in Canada, you know, ours are typically 5-year mortgages. So when inflation started to rise dramatically after COVID, you know, all the government stimulus, with all that stimulus, you know, the central banks in Canada, the U.S., and most of the Western world, they all raised rates trying to fight inflation. So starting around March 2022, rates started to rise, and then that pushed up mortgage rates. So, you know, for a Canadian who had, you know, a 2 or 3% mortgage, and as those mortgages, you know, start to expire, well, they're seeing new rates at 5 or 6%. And that, I mean, that added significantly to their monthly payment, their cost. I mean, we were seeing increases of 30, 40% to the monthly mortgage payment. Yet for the Americans, you know, most of them are locked into 30-year mortgages, so they really had no impact for most of them. And also, you know, if you look at household debt, Canada is the worst, has the worst level of debt in the G7. So for every dollar of disposable income, Canadian households owe $1.80. And if you compare that to 1980, Canadian households owed 66 cents for every dollar of disposable income. And if you compare Canada to the next most indebted countries, that being in the G7, that would be the U.S. and Germany, each of those has a dollar of debt for each dollar of disposable income compared to Canada's $1.80 disposable income. So Canada is by far the most indebted country in the G7. And with much of the Canadian debt tied up into housing, you know, high housing prices is killing the Canadian homeowner, and they're, as they're needing to renew these mortgages at these, you know, 30, 40% increases in payment.
Trump was convicted last week, yet it seems his popularity hasn't been negatively affected. What do you make of that?
Yeah, what a country, eh? You know, all we can do, we're in Canada, all we can do is observe. You know, I think that we all knew that this election was going to be a horror show, and it's certainly looking like that's what we're going to see. I mean, in theory, you would have thought that Trump being convicted, that would have mattered. But, you know, this is the U.S. The country just split down the middle. So you've got half the country that hates Trump and all he stands for, and those people aren't going to change their mind. On the other side, you've got the Trump supporters who see him as a martyr and, you know, how the system's out to get him. So bottom line, it doesn't seem to have changed many opinions here. One thing I will say, though, is I don't think either Biden or Trump is at all interested in cutting the deficit. You know, both of these guys love to spend. You know, Biden has racked up record deficits and debts. You know, we got Trump talking about as soon as he gets elected, he's going to fire Jerome Powell, replace him with a more accommodative Fed chair. I mean, if he does that, he gets a more accommodative chair, well, that's going to be inflationary. So deficits and debts are going to continue to grow, and that's going to be inflationary. You know, we got the most successful fund manager, Stanley Druckenmiller, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he was warning that we're going to see 8 to 10% inflation. You know, I think the only thing that's going to bring down inflation significantly is going to be a recession. Globally, you know, we just had a 40-year bull market in the bond market where interest rates just kept declining all the way down to zero. I mean, even negative in Europe. But now that's all changing. And I think it would be really foolish for your listeners, the average investors, not to expect that interest rates are going to sort of hang around their historic norm, more like 5 and 6% versus the, you know, the 1 or 2%. At the end of the day, inflation is going to be here for longer, and inflation eats away at your purchasing power.
With the markets, the last time you were on in April, you highlighted how there was a rotation developing out of big tech and into things like natural resources. What are you seeing now?
Yeah, you know, back then we saw inflation, again, being very sticky back in April. In the U.S. especially, we saw, you know, consumer price index and the producer price index hotter than they expected. We also had U.S. employment data being very strong. So, yeah, so we were seeing inflation-type sectors booming. So we're talking about, you know, natural resources, energy, precious metals, you know, pretty much all the commodities. And then on the other side, we saw the bigger losers at that time being the, you know, interest-sensitive stocks. So we're talking, you know, solar, home construction, retail, biotech, small caps. So they were all heading lower in April. And that all lasted for a couple of months. But now we're seeing things reverse again. We're seeing that, you know, just in the last week or so, we're seeing commodities been dropping off while tech stocks been rising. You know, NVIDIA just this week, you know, it just pushed to a new high. You know, its market cap just passed $3 trillion. You know, it's now past Apple, as the second largest company behind only Microsoft. So with jobless claims rising in the U.S., the expectation is the Fed's going to cut soon. You know, we're only in early June here. The S&P's already had 25 all-time highs. I mean, think about that. In 6 months, we've already had 25 all-time highs. So what's propelling that higher? Well, you got higher earnings. You know, S&P 500 earnings per share, they hit another high in the first quarter. So that's up 8% over last year. You got higher multiples. You know, you got enthusiasm over the AI revolution. That's, you know, contributed to, you know, multiple expansion over the last year. You got the price earning ratio increasing like 19%. So it's gone from 20.5% to 24.3. I mean, that's the highest valuation we've seen since June 2021. And then you've got, you know, the increased concentration of the top three holdings in the S&P. So we're talking, you know, Microsoft, NVIDIA, and Apple. They now make up 20% of that whole index. That's the highest percentage on record. You know, you got outperformance of the semiconductors. Again, that is at the highest level since, the dot-com era. You got growth stocks outpacing value stocks, again, at the highest ratio since the dot-com. So to us, as we approach the summer and the U.S. Election noise starts to ramp up, I think we're going to start to see real volatility come back to the market. So it's going to be a pretty interesting rest of the year. But overall, we're still very bullish for stocks.
We'll have more with Martin Strath right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Martin Strath. Martin, a lot of mixed messages around crude oil this week with OPEC Plus extending cuts, but also leaving room for some members to unwind those cuts starting in October. What do you see ahead for crude?
Yeah, oil's been bouncing around here. I mean, oil took a hit as that OPEC announcement. You know, at first it came out that they were extending, you know, their cuts, so oil liked that. But then the word that they were going to gradually phase out those quota cuts, you know, from the 2.2 billion barrels or million barrels per day. So, you know, oil prices have dipped from $80 down to about $73. Now, in the last couple of days, oil's sort of been bouncing around again. Today, as I last looked, it was about $75.50. So the bearish story suggests that OPEC is going to start to add production back in October, and that because the U.S. and China and other areas are seeing weaker economies, that's going to be bearish for oil. Now, on the bullish side, you know, we still got the Middle East, we got Russia and Ukraine, and we got inflation in Europe starting to get hotter than expected. So the oil market, you know, it's always volatile, and it's, you know, right now it's been getting oversold. Like I say, it's just kind of bumped up a bit in the last 2 days. So what we're watching is the 78 level. I mean, that's been a really key resistance level on the way up. It took about six times for oil to get through that, but once it got through it, you know, it bounced up to about $87, and then the $78 level was acting as some pretty good support level. So now we're sitting at about 75.5. So what we would be looking for is, we're still in this good seasonal period for oil. So we want to see if it can push through that 78 level. Typically seasonally, we're good till, you know, the end of June. So, you know, we could have another bit of a month here. But if you look at long term, you know, if we look at demand long term, especially those emerging countries, you know, you got India, 14% of their population, so that's 1.4 billion people, so 14% do not have electricity. You know, the International Energy Agency, they say India is going to overtake China in the next 2 years and become the biggest driver of demand for oil. We've also got a billion people worldwide who do not have electricity. You know, we keep hearing, you know, the COP28 and, you know, all the governments telling us we don't need or want oil anymore because we're all going to be driving EVs by 2035. But they don't seem to remember that oil is so widespread a part of their everyday life. You know, it's such a big component in our clothing, smartphones, you know, construction material, computers, shoes, medical supplies, you know, tires for those EV cars that we're all going to be driving. Well, they need oil. those asphalt roads those cars are going to be driving on. Well, there's oil involved in those. So these things we will continue to need. These are also things that people in emerging countries, they want and they need. So to me, the demand in oil is not going away. And then if you look on the supply side, you got, you know, I know I've said this a number of times on your show, you got this lack of investment. Capital expenditures are down to 30, 40-year lows. Rig counts continue to decline. You know, you've got, why is that? Well, you've got governments globally telling us we don't need or want fossil fuels. Again, they don't seem to, you know, look at their cell phones or their clothing or even the EV cars they're driving that have tires made out of oil, driving on roads made out of oil. So, you know, what have these governments done? Well, they've increased taxes. They've increased regulations. They've allowed no new permitting. So it's a simple case of supply and demand here. If you increase demand, so that's the emerging markets, and then you have this global effort to squeeze supply, you're going to result in a huge supply problem. So I think that's what we're going to see. So I'm expecting to see $100 oil for sure, likely 150 or higher over the next few years.
How's natural gas looking?
Well, natural gas, you know, incredibly volatile, you know, heavily affected by weather, geopolitical events. But it's going to continue to be volatile, and it's going to offer some great opportunities. I mean, if you just look back, you know, look back at COVID. When COVID happened, the natural gas price dropped about 45%. And then as we came out of the COVID lockdown, the price of natural gas went up 109%. Then we had a supply problem, in Europe. Price went up 145%. Then we had Russia invade Ukraine. Price went up 160%. Then we had warm weather and we had excess supply back in October 2022. You know, the price dropped 80%. Last July, we had a really hot summer, you know, air conditioning demand. Price of natural gas went up 77%. Just this winter in July or January, we saw the price drop down all the way down to $1.50. You know, it dropped 55%. But since then, the price is up almost 80%. So natural gas will continue to be volatile. We are very bullish natural gas long term. You know, Wells Fargo, they just forecast electricity demand in the next 6 years is going to grow by 20% just on the growth of AI. Goldman Sachs is projecting natural gas will provide 60% of that new power growth from AI and data centers by 2030. So you need to watch these supply resistance levels. I mean, that's what we do for our subscribers. I think we're going to see some great buying opportunities here in natural gas.
What's your take on gold?
Well, gold's it's up 20% year to date. You know, it peaked about 24.40 in May. Been consolidating lately. I mean, today it got hammered. It's down to what, $85 left I looked. So it's down about 23.06. But big picture, you know, there's a whole new awareness happening. You know, things have changed here. You know, ever since Russia invaded Ukraine and the West confiscated the Russian assets, that sent a big message to countries that are not friends of the West. So we're talking, you know, China, Russia, Iran, et cetera, and they've been loading up on gold. You know, China's been the second largest foreign holder of U.S. debt behind Japan. And according to the U.S. Treasury, China just sold off $53.3 billion in U.S. bonds in the first quarter of 2024. Now, that's in addition to the over $300 billion they sold off between 2021 and 2023. So China is now the largest buyer of gold. You know, gold is in new territory here. They're just as right now, there's really no defined resistance level. Gold is starting to catch people's attention. You know, it would only take a small incremental increase in the average person's portfolio to send gold much higher. And then that doesn't even consider institutional investors. You know, the gold action is suggesting that investors have finally woken up to all these massive debts and deficits that in the U.S. and most other governments have been racking up. So that's inflationary, and that reduces the purchasing power of all those currencies. So people that are seeing that their purchasing power is disappearing, you know, you want to start looking at gold as one of your alternatives. So, and again, it's not just the U.S. that's seen this. You know, it's Canada, it's the euro, it's everywhere. So I would be a buyer on a nice correction here. Like I say, gold's down about $85 rate today. It's at 2306. Our initial support level for gold is 2300. So I can certainly see gold over 3000 in the next year.
What about silver?
Well, similar story. Although as investors, we need to understand that silver is much more volatile than gold. You know, in a precious metal bull market, silver rises faster than gold. But in a bear market, silver tends to fall deeper than gold. So as, you know, both gold and silver rallied in May, silver was had a great run. But since then, in this recent pullback, you know, silver's fallen much deeper. You know, I'm looking at silver right now. It's dropped below $30. So it's down to right now $29.40. So where, you know, our initial support for silver was $29. If it can hold there, I think that might be a good buying opportunity.
Where can our listeners subscribe to the Trend Letter?
Well, they can just simply go to the, you know, our website, thetrendletter.com. So that's all one word, thetrendletter.com. They can also sign up for, we have a free service called Headlines. That's where we just kind of scour the news every morning. And we send out headlines that we think investors need to be aware of. And they can just simply read the headline. Only takes a few minutes. And if they want the details, they just click on the link and they can read the details. If they got any questions about our subscriptions or about our products, just email us at info@thetrendletter.com.
Martin, thank you so much for being on the show.
As always, Jim, my pleasure.
My guest has been Martin Straith, founder of the Trend Newsletter. He was speaking to us from Coquitlam, British Columbia. If you have any questions for Martin or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.